Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Catholic Radio in Metro Detroit. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
Hudson, welcome to Church and Culture. This show is devoted to exploring the interaction between our faith and our culture. Each week, I will talk with expert guests on topics ranging from literature, art, and music to politics, liturgy, spirituality, and education. Thank you for joining us. My guest in this hour is Walter Simmons. Walter Simmons, very noted musicologist and critic, even music historian, whose specialization in 20th century music has won a great deal of followers, including myself. I've been reading his reviews in Fanfare magazine, I guess, for 30 years. But Walter Simmons, a graduate of Manhattan School of Music, and has contributed to several editions of the New Grove Dictionary of Music, which, if you're not a classical music aficionado, I want to tell you that's as high a praise as you can get to be included in that series of volumes. One of his two books contains the composers we're going to listen to today, 2004, Voices in the Wilderness, Six American Neo-Romantic Composers. And I want to, before Walter comes on, to read you his mission statement, which I discovered on my own. He didn't show it to me. But I went to his website, which we'll talk about in a moment. And he said, my mission is the discovery and promotion of 20th and 21st century classical music that embodies traditional aesthetic values of emotional and spiritual expression, along with the clarity of formal structure and coherence. Walter Simmons, welcome to Church and Culture.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be here.
Now, the one thing I didn't mention, and I'd like you to talk about just for a minute, is you've produced over 70 recordings. Is that correct?
Well,
or 70 works that have never been
recorded. I've introduced 70 works that had not been recorded before, either by producing them myself or through consultation with conductors and soloists, which is a lot of what I do, is I serve as a repertoire consultant for a number of record companies and performers.
Obviously including Naxos.
Yes, Naxos. Well, yes, Naxos is one of the companies that has produced, that has issued many of the recordings that I've produced.
Now, do you also consult with Albany?
Yes. Yes.
Because I found some of your recordings there, and
right.
I must say, going over your website a few days ago, I started finding composers that I didn't know about, and frankly, I thought I knew about them, but I didn't know these guys. And what is your website so we can give that information to our listeners?
Okay, well, it's walter-simmons.com. The dash is important.
Yeah, and it's not an underscore, it's a dash.
No, it's a regular old-fashioned dash, and my last name is spelled S-I-M-M-O-N-S.
And for anyone interested in classical music at all, I'll give you an example of what I discovered. An American composer named Carson Kuman, who has written an oratorio based on the writings of Julian of Norwich. Now, I should have known about that, Walter.
Well, Carson is an extraordinary young fellow. He's composed over 1,000 works, and he's, I think, 33 years old. And composing isn't all that he does. That's just one part of it. But I actually was thinking of including him if we do a segment on Protestant composers, I thought I would include him.
And do you think that, I mean, I went and listened to some of his music right away, and I liked all that I heard very, very much, including this oratorio.
Yes.
How old of a fellow is Carson Kuman?
He is 33.
Oh, my Lord. Must be kind of a genius.
Yes, he is an extraordinarily bright fellow.
Well, we'll add him, and I want to tell our listeners that Walter and I are hoping that this particular show will be the first in a series of shows about music coming out of faith traditions, about composers of faith, different faith, Jewish, Protestant, Catholic, Orthodox, what you wish, and it's a very important aspect of music which very few explore. I mean, Walter Simmons does it. Our good friend Robert Riley does it. He's been on this show many times. But Walter has dug very deeply into a number of composers that I think are important to introduce to our listeners, if only that they know that there have been important 20th century composers, Catholic and otherwise, who have expressed their faith through their music.
Yes,
Walter, would you like to introduce our first, Paul Creston?
Okay, well, Paul Creston was actually, that is a pseudonym. His real name was Giuseppe Guttoveggio.
No wonder he changed it.
Right, that was the reason he said that he changed it was because people could never spell his real name. So he's of Italian background. He lived from 1906 to 1985. And there was a period during the 1950s when he was one of the most frequently performed of all American composers. But later in the 1950s, when emotional, expressive music became unfashionable, his music suffered very badly.
That must have been very hard on him personally. Did you know him?
Yes, I knew him quite well.
How did he take that? I mean, here he was, and thanks to you, a lot of his great music's been recorded now and is available on CD.
Mm-hmm.
But how did he take that?
He took it quite badly, actually. He was a self-taught individual who never studied music formally. And, you know, he was sort of the rags-to-riches type of prototype, but part of that didn't include falling from grace so suddenly and severely. And
yeah.
It was very sad. It was sad because he...
Did he live to see a little bit of a renaissance in appreciation
of
his music?
Not really. Oh. So often happened a renaissance took place shortly after he died when Gerard Schwartz began recording his works.
Well, David Diamond lived long enough to see that.
Yes, he did.
A Jewish composer who I'm sure will play at some point in the series.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sorry that Paul Creston, well, maybe he's up there somewhere looking down at us talking about him. So we're actually going to play a symphony, his third, called The Three Mysteries. Could you tell us a little bit about that and when it was premiered?
Yes, well, I thought we'd play the second movement. The Three Mysteries refer to Christ's nativity, crucifixion, and resurrection. And the second movement, the crucifixion, is the movement that I selected. All the themes in the symphony are Gregorian chant melodies.
Wow.
And so this movement is really a passacaglia, which is a variation form where a bass line is repeated over and over while variations occur above. And the passacaglia bass in this case is a Gregorian chant that is heard during the movement at several different speeds simultaneously. Sounds very abstract, but
no, it's not. I mean, we've talked about polyphony and counterpoint before on this show.
Right.
And, this was also premiered by Eugene Ormandy and the Philadelphia Orchestra in 1950. I mean,
that's
that was
right.
A very big deal, wasn't it?
That's right. It was a very big deal. It got a lot of attention at that time. And I think that when our listeners hear it, they will see that it is very expressive, emotional music.
Well, we're going to do something on this show that we haven't done before. On the other shows where we featured music, we've played smaller bits, and we've suffered the frustration of having to cut off gorgeous music. Well, on this particular show, we're going to have a go at playing the entire movement. So I want our listeners to know that we're going to be playing music that's 6 minutes long, 7 minutes long, and so forth, and want you to just hang in there and enjoy it. We'll be back after this movement is played. This is Paul Creston's Symphony No. 3, The Three Mysteries, the second movement, played by the Seattle Symphony and conducted by George Schwartz. We've been listening to the Third Symphony of the American composer Paul Crutzen, and that second movement depicts the crucifixion of Christ. The other movements depict the Nativity and the Resurrection. Talking with Walter Simmons, an expert on 20th century music and all kinds of music, tell us about this next composer we're going to listen to. This particular piece of music is grabbingly beautiful.
Yes. Vittorio Giannini, he was roughly a contemporary of Crutzen's. He was born in Philadelphia in 1903 and lived until 1966. He actually wrote a great deal of music within the Roman Catholic tradition, including a four-opera tetralogy on the life of Christ, which has never been performed. But unfortunately, his religious music is not available on recording, so I selected a movement of one of his symphonies, the second movement of his fourth symphony, composed in 1959. I think has the qualities, even though it's not explicitly religious, I think it has some of the qualities of spiritual beauty and ecstasy, which you will hear. One little interesting point is that the main theme is actually a 12-tone theme, yet it is treated in such a way that it sounds totally romantic.
Well, I'll tell you, as I was playing this, my 19-year-old son wandered in the room and said, "Dad, who is that?" So let's listen to this second movement of Vittorino Giannini's Symphony No. 4, Movement No. 2, in a recording produced by our guest, Walter Simmons. We've been listening to the amazingly beautiful Fourth Symphony of Vitorino Giannini. We're talking with Walter Simmons, musicologist, music historian, and critic. We'll be back right after this message.
The Priests and Brothers of Jesus Christ invite you to their 11th benefit dinner on Wednesday, May 11th at the Inn at St. John's in Plymouth. Dale Alquist is the keynote speaker. This silent auction and dinner event will sponsor and benefit the Jesus Christ Family Center in South Lyon. This center serves as the headquarters for all the apostolic work that Jesus Christ performs throughout the country and also serves and nourishes the faith of many families in Southeast Michigan. Please visit MielusChristi.org/benefit dinner for more information.
It's time for Family Man with Dr. Gregory Popchak.
It isn't often that popes give parenting advice, but at a recent meeting of the Pontifical Council for the Family, Pope Francis did just that. And what was the tip? Waste time with your children. As moms and dads, we're like latter-day Marthas from the Bible, so busy with many things, we often forget to choose the better part of simply hanging out with our children and just being. Taking a walk, playing catch, gathering dolls for a tea party, wrestling on the floor, playing dress-up, just being silly are skills that teach parents and children the joy of living. As Pope Francis points out, the best way to learn that life is a gift, that relationships are important, and that it's people, not activities, that matter, is to simply be willing to waste time together. When we waste time with our children, we're not really wasting time at all. We're simply putting in the time that keeps our children's hearts from wasting. I'm Dr. Greg Popchak, but you can call me Family Man.
To discover more ways faith can enrich your life, visit CatholicCounselors.com.
The new Ave Maria Radio app is available now for all your smart devices. Live streaming and audio on demand is included, but there's new features including video of free-range Q&A and the entire text of the RSVCE Bible. The app is free and easy to get. But when you download the Truth and Life Audio New Testament featuring the voices of many Hollywood stars, you'll be supporting Ave Maria Radio. It's the new and free Ave Maria Radio app. Search at your app store or go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the app banner.
I am back with Walter Simmons, a music critic, musicologist, record producer. But he's responsible for bringing this great music back to life in recordings that are widely available from labels such as Naxos and Albany Records. We're going to now move to another American-Italian Catholic composer, Nicholas Flagello. Tell us about Mr. Flagello.
Flagello was somewhat younger than these other composers, and he was actually a student of Giannini as well as of Ildebrando Pizzetti. And Flagello had a very strong religious bent, and wrote at the end of each of his scores the letters AMDG for Ad Maiorem Dei Gloria. So he considered all his music to be basically a gift to God.
Now, did you know Flagello, too?
Yes, I knew him quite well.
I'll ask you the same question. How did he take the turn toward ugly music?
Well, very badly. He never even had, because he was younger, he never had that period of ascendancy that Preston and Giannini had. He was really struggling in the dark his whole creative life. It was a very sad life that ended prematurely, and it's not a happy story at all.
He actually died in New Rochelle the year I moved to the New Rochelle area. I wish I had met him. But we're going to listen to his Missa Sinfonica. Tell us about that. Gloria Movement.
Yes, the Gloria Movement. This also is based on Gregorian chant melodies. It's a symphonic mass, and it has the five sections of the Catholic Mass, but no chorus or singing. It's purely orchestral. And the climax at the end, so you mustn't end this one early, brings in the famous Gloria chant melody. Similar to the Creston and also subject to some of the same criticisms, the music does not take an austere tone, as you heard with the Preston, it's very full-bodied romanticism. And Flagello, it was the same thing. It was, he took these, the religious material and filtered it through his very human sensibility, as you will hear.
Well, this music is joyful, as befits the Gloria. We're listening to the Misa Sinfonica, the second movement, Gloria. That was the Gloria movement from the Missa Sinfonica of Nicholas Flagello. And Walter Simmons, it's appropriately joyful. And you know, it sounds very contemporary, like it could have been composed, you know, this year.
Yes, it was composed in 1957, if I failed to mention that before.
But it's very fresh on the ear.
Yes, well, it's a wonderful piece. And I wanted to mention that all of the music that I selected today is available currently on commercial recordings at your favorite CD outlet.
Yes, and that would mean also I'm downloading, too.
Yes, actually, that's true.
And Walter Simmons, who I'm talking to, I just want to remind you, has written a book about all these composers, and it's entitled Voices in the Wilderness, Six American Neo-Romantic Composers, for sale on Amazon. But he also, I failed to mention, that he wrote the entry in the New Grove Dictionary of Music and Musicians on Vittorio Giannini, which is quite a privilege to have done. Now, we're going to move a little bit away from the temperament and style that we've listened to thus far. We've had three Italian-American composers, and this last composer is Polish. Tell us about him.
Well, Andrzej Pnufnik was born in Poland, but escaped very dramatically to England during the early 1950s, and he was eventually knighted shortly before his death in 1991. He wrote a number of really beautiful pieces. In fact, his Sinfonia Sacra, which is his third symphony, I believe to be one of the greatest European symphonies of the 20th century. I would have chosen to play that, except I didn't want to have to cut it up at all. So instead I chose a piece of similar style called the Katyn Epitaph. This is related to the incident in 1943 when some 15,000 Polish prisoners were brutally murdered one by one and dropped into graves that they themselves had to dig. This atrocity was originally attributed to the Nazis, but it turned out later to have been the Russians who were responsible.
Yes, and the Allies covered it up during the entire war.
Right. Unbelievable.
And Pnufnik, actually, in his public comments about this piece, regards it as a kind of slap in the face to the Allies for allowing that to happen.
Oh, well, I was not aware of that, actually. I did not realize that.
It's wonderful how the Internet works.
Yes, yes.
But and rightfully so, this was the massacre when the Russians... They knew they were going to take over Poland early in World War II, and they rounded up Polish intellectuals, religious leaders, professors, and military, 15,000 of them, and slaughtered them. There's a very good movie on the Polish movie, the name Katyn, where you can see this.
Yes, I've heard of that. I haven't actually seen it.
Now, this piece is powerful. It begins with a solo violin that's very high tessitura, comes down, and the woodwinds join in, and it really builds to an amazing climax.
Yes, it's that Pnufnik is very sensitive to instrumental timbre, very delicate sounds, and this idea of slow growth.
Well, we're going to hear it, and we're going to leave ourselves a little time to talk about it at the end, so let's listen to it now. This is by Andrzej Pnufnik, and it's an orchestral memorial to the slaughter by the Russians of the Poles at Katyn. was the very powerful Katyn Elegy composed by the Polish composer Andrzej Panufnik. Is now, Walter Simmons, is this typical of Panufnik's music to move it, to develop in that way?
Yes, it is typical of the music that he wrote during the 1960s. And around 1970, his style changed somewhat, and the later music is not so much like this. But the works that he wrote during the 1960s, which includes this piece that we just heard, the Sinfonia Sacra, his second symphony, Sinfonia Elegiaca, have this same very reflective and intensely introspective quality.
Well, I would imagine that St. John Paul the Great would have known Panufnik's music, if not Panufnik himself.
That's very possible, yes.
Because he was a student, he was a priest, and on the way up the steps of the church during the 60s and 70s, became Pope in November of 1978. This would have been just the kind of music that expressed the Polish Catholic spirituality that he represented.
Yes, I would imagine that that's especially true of the Sinfonia Sacra, which is based entirely on a Polish chant called the Bogorodzica, Bogorodzica. And I understand that that is a melody that all Poles are familiar with.
Well, I tell you, I have great admiration for the Polish people and their culture and their faith. I've been reading about the Warsaw Uprising of 1944 and what a courageous group of people. Now, moving forward, what kind of music and what kind of groupings do you have in mind for future shows on music and faith?
Well, I was thinking of possibly a program on music by Jewish composers that is spiritual in nature, and also a program on Protestant composers. And if there's interest, we could pursue other religious traditions.
Well, I definitely think we need to do the Orthodox.
Yes, yes. Alan Hovhaness would fit in there.
Yes, and then we could... I love your taste in music. It matches my own. But you know so much more about it than I do, and you know so many more composers than I do. And Bob Riley and I both have the deepest respect for your work and your contribution to classical music.
Well, thank you very much.
Where can our listeners read your commentary?
Well, I have retired from Fanfare Magazine as of last year. But on my website, which I mentioned before and I'll mention it again, it's at www.walter-simmons, that dash is a hyphen, Simmons spelled SIMMONS.com. You can find almost all of my reviews and articles and program notes there, as well as other kinds of features. I feature a particular composer every so often, and that's the best way to find my writing, as well as my two books, which are both available from Amazon and Barnes & Noble.
Well, Walter Simmons, thanks for being a guest on Church and Culture. We look forward to your return to talk and listen to composers of faith.
Well, thank you very much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
And to all of our listeners, hang around, and after this break, we'll come back with another very interesting guest.
Following is a message brought to you by the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan. Symbols in Scripture reveal profound meanings of God's eternal truths. In the ancient world, a serpent or dragon was a symbol for evil.
So it's not surprising we find both in the Bible representing Satan. In Eden, a serpent comes to the garden to tempt Adam and Eve. God promises that serpent that one day Eve's child would crush the serpent's head. In Revelation, we see a symbolic dragon before a woman about to give birth to a son. We see this woman as Mary, a new Eve, and her newborn son is Jesus. Jesus is saved before the dragon can devour him, so Jesus can crush Satan's head when he dies on the cross. Throughout Scripture, we see this battle of good versus evil, and we have hope in knowing that God ultimately wins. For more insights into the meaning of Scripture, visit the Catholic Biblical School of Michigan on Facebook or at cbsmich.org.
Father Ben Luckey spoke to the women of Heart to Heart at the May 2012 meeting.
And we say in theology that God exhausted the obediential potency of creaturehood. That's the theological term. In other words, God exhausted himself in creating Mary. If you took every beautiful thing, and how magnificently beautiful these things are, and you look around the earth and you take all of the beauty of the created universe, and it's as dung compared to the beauty of the Most Blessed Virgin Mary.
This is Henry Root, your host for Putting On the Mind of Christ. May is the month of Mary. At Heart to Heart, Father Luckey talked about Mary, her love for her son, and the example she sets for us. Hear Woman, a Light for the World on Putting On the Mind of Christ this Sunday afternoon at 3, encoring Saturday afternoons at 6 on 990 WDEL, 1440 WMAX, and AveMariaRadio.net on the Internet.
Men, women, marriage, what's the point? Join Father John Ricardo as he walks us through God's plan for a marriage, Ephesians 5, Fatherhood, and the Dignity of Woman. Learn why there are two creation stories. What does it mean to be children of God? And what does Paul mean when he says, wives be subject to your husbands? All this and more is covered in Father John Ricardo's 4-CD set, What's the Point? To purchase your copy, go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on What's the Point under the Store tab.
Have you ever tried making a bucket stool out of concrete? Well, Ben Ueda has, and his clever design is achieving worldwide recognition. Tune in to hear more from this homeschool grad and entrepreneur on today's Homeschool Heartbeat.
Ben, how did the principles you learned from your parents come in handy when you started your own business?
I don't know if there's principles, but I think there's just a lack of assumptions. I think that's one of the advantages of homeschooling, is that you're not confined to traditional ways of thinking. And as long as your parents are homeschooling you as a way of showing you and exposing you to more stimulus rather than trying to protect you from things, I think you end up becoming very resourceful. And it actually, I think, is a great way to prepare for a career being an entrepreneur. So I would say it's about the wide openness and the lack of structure actually led to that sort of aggressiveness and simply saying, why can't I start a business?
Well, that's fantastic. But can you give us some examples of the projects you've worked on as part of Homemade Modern?
I'll give you a few examples of some of my favorites. So one of our most popular projects is called the bucket stool. And we show how easy it is to take a 5-gallon bucket